All together now.
All together now.
Checking.
Welcome to Our Thoughts Tonight. Join us as we chat in a mellow mood about music, philosophy, psychology, and anything else that will come to mind. Enjoy.
Our Thoughts Tonight.
Welcome.
I am here with Ashok.
Hello.
And Zach.
Yellow.
And Sean.
Hello.
We've got the full panel today.
When was the last time we had a full panel? A long time ago, I
think. Over two months ago?
Yeah. Well, I called in that one time, but whatever. You know, I wasn't a full panel, really.
I called in once, too, as a guest.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, tonight we're talking about mythology. This is the long-awaited mythology episode that we've been playing for, seems like, half a year at this point. but we're all good. We're all safe with COVID.
All safe.
Yeah. And before we get into Kuruchem Sanctum, which we usually go into, now we have a pretty nice introduction about our long-awaited episode tonight, presented by Sean. Sean, what's going on over there?
Well, I have an excerpt from the introduction from a book called Homer and the Scholars. It's a collection of critical essays about Homer. And it's by George Steiner and was first published in 1962. Finally, there has occurred a deep change in our understanding of myth. We have come to realize that myths are among the subtlest and most direct language of experience. They reenact moments of signal truth or crisis in the human condition. But mythology is more than history made memorable. The mythographer, the poet, is the historian of the unconscious. This gives to the great myths their haunting universality. Not since the chiliastic panics of the late 10th century, when men believed that the second coming was at hand, moreover, has there been an age more nightmare-ridden by mythical imaginings than our own. Men who have fought for political survival against the myth of the Superman and the thousand-year Reich know that fables are deadly serious. More than our predecessors, therefore, we approach Homer on his own terms. At the core of the Homeric poems lies the remembrance of one of the greatest disasters that can befall man, the destruction of a city. A city is the outward sum of man's nobility. In it, his condition is most thoroughly humanized. When a city is destroyed, man is compelled to wander the earth or dwell in the open fields in partial return to the manner of a beast. That is the central realization of the Iliad. Resounding through the epic, now in stifled illusion, now in strident lament, is the dread fact that an ancient and splendid city has perished by the edge of the city. And the city is really still important to us today, both mythologically as well as, of course, culturally. Think of the myths of cities, Jerusalem, the New Jerusalem, Uruk, Peking. They all have their basis in mythology. And myths in contemporary society, Steiner mentioned a couple. He mentioned the Third Reich, but we should also remember that the myth of communism, the utopia. The Muslim terrorists act on mythology as well. The rapture in contemporary Christian mythology. James Joyce wrote one of the great novels of the 20th century, Ulysses, based on myth. The Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter and Star Wars, and the Da Vinci Code all have their basis in archetypes coming from mythology. We should also remember that the Crusades and the Reformation, as much as for political reasons, pitted one mythology against another. Finally, one should also remember that ancient Athens, which we considered so advanced, tried Socrates for impiety and corrupting the youth and put him to death for it. Mythology, therefore, is as important today as it was 2,500 years ago.
All right. Thank you for that awesome lead into the long-awaited mythology episode, Sean. That was great.
Yeah, there's a lot to say about that. And I think we'll get into the after Kuruchem Sanctum.
Sounds good.
All right. See you
guys
in like 5 minutes.
Soon.
We're back.
We are back.
All right. I believe I have some definitions for those terms, Sean, I think.
Yeah, let's start with setting up some I think let's dispel some myth about myth and also establish some definitions. First of all, we are not using the term myth or mythology in the sense that it's some falsehood. If you're inside the myth and you believe the myth, like if you go to church on Sunday and believe in the Christian God, that's a mythology. And I don't mean that derogatorily, it's a falsehood. I mean that that's what you believe. If you're inside the myth, you believe it. If you're outside, you don't believe it. But myths also have a definite definition, pardon my almost redundancy. Myths primarily consist of narratives about gods and goddesses of a particular culture. Myths consist of traditional tales and stories that mostly come from the oral tradition. Myths also take place in the past, a distant past in which things happened very different from today. For instance, like the Old Testament is a good example of that. Myths also remain true in that they represent a story or form of how things really happened. As I said before, a culture inside the myth believes it a true story. Myths often explain, justify, instruct, or warn, as in the myths of Demeter, Theseus, Buddha, and Niobe. Now, myths also, we should remember, myths also overlap with folk tales, fairy tales, and legends. And I think probably what will come closest in our talks tonight are probably legends. Legends are tales about people that may have actually lived. King Arthur was probably a real person, probably not as depicted in how we know him today with Camelot and the Round Table. But legends are about great heroes, Beowulf, the Nibelungenlied, La Morte d'Arthur, Faust, the Ramayana, the Odyssey and the Iliad, and most of these also consist of both legend as well as mythology. So there's an overlap between all these different genres that come out of they all come out of the oral tradition, but there's definitely a mix between them all. The Odyssey, for instance, contains stories about the gods, as well as legends about Achilles, Odysseus, and the other heroes.
It's funny. I'm hearing this, and I'm not trying to jump the gun too much, but I mean, this. I feel like we've talked about this aspect in the episode before. I've mentioned it, but this idea of the myth and the legend and these, I mean, at their core, they're emotional stories that have this sort of oomph to it that's different. You read a historical account of like a battle, and it's a different feeling than the story of Hercules or whatever, right? So. And you mentioned earlier before the Kuchum Sangta about about Muslim terrorists, like the myth of communism and whatnot, and this it's very pathos appeal, right? And it's interesting because how it still relates to today, I think it goes beyond just stories. Like myths are stories at their essence, they're stories or beliefs. Beliefs is a weird term to use, but I would just say cultural stories, right?
But they're definitely myths are by definition narratives.
Yeah, they're stories. But in terms of like their beliefs, it becomes different. I feel like myths are better defined as feelings. At least, I guess, it depends on who lives it. But like, not to get too political again, but like, I feel like this idea of this pathos story narrative still lives on in a certain sense. Even in something as like the myth of America, as like something like maybe a modern definition of manifest destiny, or like, you know, even maybe going more negative, American exceptionalism, this like this pathos feel of like just, you know, like this glory, right? Usually myths, at least the way we view them nowadays, are usually of the past, right? So, and I'm sure people back then also viewed these stories as like things of the past, this idea of glory. So I feel like it's interesting because we're entering an age where these pathos feelings are seen as negative, but they're also still used, if that makes any sense.
Well, do you think they're negative? I'm not entirely...
I think they're seen as negative, I think.
Well, I think it depends on whether you're inside or outside the myth.
It depends on if you're interested or not in it.
Yeah, right.
How much you're invested into it.
Yeah.
Like
The thing is, like, for what I think about usually is, like, you know, let's add in, like, religion, right? Which is a mythology in a certain sense. Again, not in a derogatory term, but these myths, these emotional appeals, these stories of whatever, right? Like, we live in an age where, you know, religion is kind of falling. We live in an age where these feelings are like, oh, that's just like, you know, that's just that guy who's relying on faith or relying on, like, it's just like, for example, if anybody's an American exceptionalist now, in most communities that are not, you know, of one side or the other, they will be like, eh, that's whatever. Like, very few people, I feel like people are starting to lose faith, I think, in these pathos things. But I just still find it funny that, like, we still put so much emphasis on, let's, you know, it sounds so weird, but, like, the glory of science or the glory of, you know, modern ideas or the glory of progressivism or the glory of the new day or the glory of, you know, whatever.
I feel like reason why it's still around and still current is because it's the glory of storytelling.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing when I mean about mythology is, like, all mythology is stories. I feel like the feeling of mythology can really go with anything, even just stories.
It's versatile.
I think so. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's just emotion at the core of it. But
I would tend to disagree with that. The idea of progressivism is more a political or cultural phenomena, more than a mythological phenomena.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's mythological. I'm saying the feeling of mythology. Like, so one thing I want to mention with communism, right? So the myth of, like, not myth, but, like, the specter of communism. Not a specter, I should say. The utopian feeling, right? So, like, I feel like in a certain sense, when someone, like the basis of a lot of leftism in general is to create better societies. That's, like, at the core of what it is, right? Improvement, it's progressing, right? And communism is the most distinct, not distinct, but, like, the most pronounced aspect of it, like, actually talking about a utopia, right? So, I mean, it's not really story-based. Like, it's not like, you know, everybody remember, you know, the god Stalin. It's not like that. But I still feel like there is a sense of, like, emotional drive that comes from those passions or whatnot. Well, that is similar to mythology.
Well, I think if you take a step back, we want to think about mythology, contemporary mythologies, as an attempt to revive ancient mythologies. The idea of utopia is a very ancient one. The ideal society. And that goes back centuries, and it has to do with how the gods bequeathed cities and gave them power. And the same thing also with any culture's idea about itself is basically a narrative.
The thing is, like, I agree with that, but I'm just saying, like, in the future of this, like, for example, nowadays people scoff at the idea, well, not scoff, but, like, people are like, you know, it's kind of looked down upon a little bit, at least, like, oh, you're talking about your culture as if something so different. Well, like, where we're headed now, people are, I think, more interested in, like, this global, much more globalized community of humanity, right? It's a different type of tradition, I feel like, that's developing into something different. I think on a previous episode, I mentioned, like, how we're starting to question a lot of things. I feel like that's the idea of, like, the cultural beliefs are shifting towards a sort of unified, just a unified feeling, which is different than what was before, I feel like, where the community has evolved, basically.
You said we're questioning a lot of things. So in modern day, people are questioning the archetypal, like, mythological.
I mean, not directly. Rooted. I mean, not directly, but I feel
is
like.
Is that what you're trying to say then?
Yeah. Like,
saying that they scuff at it. Like, no, like, nah.
For example, like, how should I say it? Like, we don't, I mean, I say this as a reason war was fought, but, like, there's still nationalism, obviously, but nowadays nationalism is seen, and I'm not trying to have any opinions here, but, like, nationalism is, like, the other, if that makes sense, instead of the norm. Like, there's still the casual patriotism or whatever that exists, mm-hmm. but in a certain sense, we all, like, when we think of London, we don't think of, like, that far-off city.
Right.
You know, we think of, like, okay, there's another, huge city, megapolis, whatever, in the world. And I feel like this idea of this global community is replaced, I don't mean in a bad way, but, like, is harboring the feeling of a united emotional appeal.
We're coming back to a collectivism feeling.
Kind of.
After, like, let's say 70 plus years of, maybe even more, 150, 200 years of individualism.
And to go back to mythology, and, you know, back to the actual story aspect of what I'm talking about, like, also the whole aspect of, like, we've gone, so, you know, this is kind of not just to the modern day, but for the past, like, few hundred years, but, like, now we have the abilities to look at all these myths and see the commonalities and extract what's important. So in this actual mythology point of it, it's like the myths are almost starting to combine too, in a certain sense.
You're thinking about it as every person in their point in history has thought about it as right now we're at the end of history. That's the point that you're looking at it.
Well,
but that's not true.
No, I'm not saying it's the end of history.
The same person said the same thing 1,000 years ago.
True. But the thing is, again, everybody says it at a certain point, but there's also the literal definition of where it's going. Of course, we're going to be much more globalized in the future.
Right.
But, like, for example, like, we're a lot more globalized now than 100 years ago, right? Really, the World War II is really the pinnacle of that, you know, post-World War II. Like, we've never had, well, I guess in a certain sense with colonial powers, but we've never had, like, a situation where it's almost like, okay, I'm just bringing the Cold War. We've never had a point where it's like, you're either, like, you know, capitalist or communist, or you're out of the picture. Like, it's the entire world was on that stage in a certain sense. So I'm talking about going into the future, kind of trying to go back to the ideas of emotion and mythology. I think there is a certain community that's coming out of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying.
I'm not entirely in agreement with that. I think that the old myths are still very much active in regards to how cultures view themselves. Let's take the tribalism in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And a lot of that goes back to very, very ancient beliefs. And those still drive, as much as we would like to reason differently, those ancient drives stemming from those cultural mythologies, they still have a powerful play today.
Well, I mean, when you bring the example of the Middle East, yes, but let's take Western Europe, for example. It's a different thing with Western Europe or even America.
I would argue against that. Let's take the Third Reich. The Third Reich was based on the Aryan myth going back 1,000 years.
Yeah. Well, let's take the Aryan myth. It's the idea of the Aryan myth also tried to talk about the Indo-European unity, for example, or the Aryan unity between whatever.
Yeah, the Aryan unity.
The Aryan unity.
Right.
And, okay, that was like 70, 80 years ago. Nowadays, when you go, like, first of all, people aren't as religious or whatever, or, you know, whatever, you know, in the modern world or the Western world, I should say. But, like, there is still a bit of that, but there's also a sense of, like, okay, for example, Scandinavia, right? Scandinavian countries are very much, like, they view themselves as, it's so easy to go from one country to the other. It's becoming more culturally unified in a sense. Like, if you go to Western Europe, you're not going to have a lot of, like, no one's really going to care about, like, the cultural differences on a regular person of, like, a French person and, like, a Dutch person. Like, there is difference that people are going to notice it, but no one's going to be like, okay, there is, like, this intrinsic difference that's, like, you know, we both have our different distinct mythologies, and there are distinct mythologies that are important, but, like, the everyday person is going to be different. Like, even the idea of the EU or something like that, it's just becoming, the groups are becoming larger and larger in some areas, I think.
Anyone's going to have,
at least in the Western world,
anyone's going to have their opinion, though, based off of, like, just you as a person.
Well, yeah.
How you believe in said mythology, whatever mythology it is. Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
So you think that mythology is, like, come up until this point, right?
Okay.
And you think that it's, like, everyone's got an equal view on it? Or
it's weird.
Summarize. What do you mean? No, you're good.
The quickest summarization is when I talk about mythology, I'm not really talking about mythology.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the emotion that mythology gives off.
Produces.
Right? Yeah. Produces. The idea of, like, this just almost that feel goodness, right?
Okay.
Like that I can look up to it or whatever, right?
Let me ask you this question. Do you think 2,000 years from now that there could be a new mythology that's produced that people believe in?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's fine. I mean, yeah, mythologies are produced all the time, you know, in a certain sense. But,
if it were to be like 2,000 years from now, what do you think it would be?
well, 2,000 years from now. I don't know. I mean, yeah, are we going to live that long?
I don't know. Yeah,
with global warming and everything?
We got, like, cybernetic parts.
I mean, look, that's kind of the point of it, though. It's like, how should I say it? Like,
are you saying it's obsolete?
Mythology?
Yeah.
No, I think it's becoming, larger, but in a different sense, I think.
Oh, it's becoming a collective.
Let me give an example. Like, yeah. The Greek city states.
How is it? I don't see. I don't want to cut you off.
Yeah.
Sorry. I don't want to cut you off. But I don't think that there. I think maybe it's hard to see because we're in the current present time. Yeah. But I don't see anything. I mean, I don't. If you look back to the, let's say, when the Catholic Church was, you know, had its tight grip. In Europe, you know, you can look back around those times and all of those, the paintings, the icon paintings and the figures of, you know, like the Caravaggio paintings of, what is his name? I think it's Saint John. Okay. I can't remember which saint. One of them, yeah. Anyway, so like you look at those as a Christian in the 1600s, and you're like, oh, you know, this guy was is a patriarchal figure, okay. And you know, I go every Sunday to pray for Jesus, which is also another figure.
Yeah.
You could say throw him into mythology if you really want. Some people would.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you kind of operated on that functioning, where. You know, the Luke Skywalker, so to say, of your life was Jesus Christ. But there is so many different Jesus Christs now.
Oh, okay, but
it's like, not just Luke Skywalker. It's like the homeboy on YouTube that you follow or this guy on the radio. So it's there's so many different forms of that.
But the thing is, the actual archetype of the Luke Skywalker of the thing is, as you say, present in all of them. I mean, that's the common thing of mythology.
Yeah, because it's just
a format.
No, it's a format, but the thing is,
protagonist.
I'm talking in a cultural sense. It's becoming, like, for example, Luke Skywalker. We don't view Luke Skywalker as the hero of all whatever is racist, Scandinavian.
Now, let me give you my real question. Okay. Do you think this has anything to do with postmodernism?
In a certain sense, in a
or deconstructionalism
in a variable sense, yes. As a proneness to
postmodernism,
as a proneness to that, but also as an anti to that. But I want to talk about the Greek quick thing with the Greek city states, for example. Right. My entire point is, I think not necessarily the mythology, but the feeling of mythology is being expanded on in a globalized community. So, for example, a Greek city state would worship. Each state, you know, although they all believe in the gods, each state would worship, like, they had their own patron deity, right? That, there might be little to no correlation, but in nowadays, forget nowadays, let's go to, like, a few hundred years after, right? Okay, instead of, like, a few different communities on a little, like, peninsula, worshiping different deities, you had, like, organized religions that are like
New
expanding
York?
That try to unify people, right?
Well, let's even go before Christianity. Yep. If you're in the Roman Empire, the Roman Empire would deify their emperors upon death.
Yeah.
And there's this, I think it's Hadrian, who had this funny line on his deathbed. I think I'm becoming a god. Yeah. Right,
you said that to us off the podcast before.
We were talking about this. Yeah. It was like a prelude to this episode. Yeah.
It was like after hours at TD. Yeah.
But let's go back to Luke Skywalker for a moment. Right, it's not really a matter of the myth has changed. It's just evolved.
Yeah.
If you look at all the dying and reviving gods in mythology, and there's a whole slew of them. I have a short list here. Going back to ancient Babylon, Inanna and Tammuz, Isis and Arias, Baal, Aphrodite and Ananias, King Arthur is considered a dying and reviving god.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That he's the king that will come again.
Sword in the stone.
Quetzalcoatl, the Aztec.
Mm-hmm.
The Green Knight and Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, the famous story from the Middle Ages.
Mm-hmm.
The Green Knight is beheaded and he puts his head back on and walks away.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the green world. It goes back to the ancient need the prehistoric need, actually not the ancient, but the prehistoric need, to the first human beings who started planting crops. We need the crops to grow. We cut the crops, they die. We hope they will grow again. And these archetypes have just, they haven't changed. They've just evolved.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. That's basically my point is they're still here, but they're pronounced in ways that are more universal. Like, let's give an idea, example. Okay, so like King Arthur is a clear example of like the Bretonian figure, right? He's supposed to be the king of the Britons, right? It's very cultural in that sense. My point is that my point is really just small at the end of it. It's shifting from a cultural sense to a much more universalistic sense where, yeah, there's always different, you know, examples of the same archetype or whatever, even in our modern day. Maybe not in the living, the reviving God archetype, but like, I don't know, some other archetype in a modern sense. Like, even things like the strong man, right? Even something as like simple, borderline, not even an archetype, even that can be pronounced in like Theodore Roosevelt.
Well, right? let's actually give examples of, let's go back to the strong men of ancient history. Gilgamesh, Hercules, right? Two of the better known ones. How many examples can you give like in superheroes today, like Superman?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
A myth of the great strength, the great strong hero.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's literally my point. It's
a lot of movies are based off of now too. Instead of it being something that you have the utmost faith in, say you're praying to this said God for your crops to grow. You're not doing that now. You're going to the movie theaters and eating popcorn, watching people portray as gods on screen.
Yeah, we're talking about
being
this.
It's being marketed now, opposed to, but that's the evolution of it.
It's the heroes, the legends of the heroes. Like, we're talking about this during the quote unquote break on Christian Sanctum is like, for example, Marvel heroes, they're not like gods or whatever, but they are almost iconic figures in a certain, I don't want to say universalist because like whatever, but it's
about archetypal.
Yeah, it's
got a Norse god.
No, they're very archetypal. But
got Thor, dude.
No, yeah, or the literal like a little example of Thor, but also just like they're not seen as like, okay, we got like the Iron Man guys over there, and we got the Thor guys over there. Mm-hmm. Or it's just like these are icons.
They're unified.
These are icons
but
that we don't worship.
We do have the DC versus the Marvel.
See, yeah. That's a great point.
So now you're getting Egyptian. Yeah. Like mythological figures versus the Greeks.
Yeah. See, yeah, division still exists, but I think overall it's starting to go into a much more unified path. Yeah. Like, again, like a Superman is for anybody, right? An Iron Man is for anybody. And I'm sure, you know, at the end of the day, it's not that fruitful. I mean, it's still division in a certain sense, but it's weird how book characters, not even book, comic book characters, and of course, book characters in the past have become mythological figures, but like, these comic book figures, although we don't worship them, everybody knows them. Like, for example,
they're iconic.
A guy from, like, you know, 8th century Denmark is not going to know who the hell Ra is. Well, who knows? But, like, who the hell Ra is. So,
But let's differentiate here, because I think you're mixing heroes with gods. And Hercules wasn't prayed to. He wasn't. It was right, and demigod, half human, right? Yeah. And those were not worshipped.
Yeah,
it's the gods and goddesses who were worshipped. Yeah. Those who are the one you offered sacrifice to.
Yeah, I think that's a good distinction.
I think before you continue, save your thought now. Remember it.
Okay,
your thought tonight.
Okay, I want to take a break. We're gonna take a break, and we're gonna listen to some music, so we can catch our thoughts.
Catch your thoughts tonight.
I'm going to catch my thoughts tonight.
And so the listener doesn't lose track of what's going on here. We've entered into whatever Sigmund Freud called, I'm trying to remember now. I think it was called open. Shit, I can never remember it. Something like that. A free association, where you get to the point in psychoanalytic therapy where you're thoughts are essentially coming out of your mouth. So Sean's got a poem, and Sean and I have been talking about the last 2 days about French moralists. So after Sean's poem, I'm around the same time as the French moralists was Jean-Philippe Rameau, which is a great composer. So we're going to listen to some music by Rameau after Sean's poem.
Okay, so I actually have two poems by Alexander Pope, the great English Augustan poet, who was born in 1688 and died in 1744. And these poems, I think, are really a good contrast in how Pope himself feels, whether he's inside the myth or outside the myth. And during much of English letters for long centuries, they used the ancient Greek and Roman myths as part of their poetry, although they didn't no longer believed in it, but it was just a conceit of the poetry. And that is, and Alexander Pope uses that in his great poem, Windsor Forest. I won't read the whole thing. I'm going to read the first 10 lines and then maybe the last 10. Okay, the poem itself goes on for about 40 lines. And Windsor Forest is the royal forest in London. Thy forest, Windsor, and thy green retreats, at once the monarch's and the muse's seats, invite my lays. Be present, sylvan maids, unlock your springs and open all your shades. Granville commands, you aid, O muses bring, what muse for Granville can refuse to sing? The groves of Eden vanished now so long, live in description and look green in song. These were my breast inspired with equal flame, like them in beauty should be like fame. While by our oaks the prescient loads are borne and realms commanded which those trees adorn, nor proud Olympus yields a nobler sight, though God's assembled grace is towering height. Then what more humble mountains offer here, where in their blessing all those gods appear? See Pan with flocks, with fruits Pomona crowned. Here blushing Flora paints the enameled ground. Here Ceres' gifts in waving prospect stand, and nodding tempt the joyful reaper's hand. Rich industry sits smiling on the plains, and peace and plenty tell a Stuart reign. Now, contrast with that, this poem by Alexander Pope called The Dying Christian to His Slave. And Pope was a Christian, so here he is not outside the myth, but he's very much inside the myth. Vital spark of heaven flame, quit, O quit, this mortal frame. Trembling, hoping, lingering, flying, oh, the pain, the bliss of dying. Cease, fond nature, cease thy strife, and let me languish into life. Hark, they whisper, angels say, sister spirit, come away. What is this absorbs me quite, steals my senses, shuts my sight, drowns my spirits, draws my breath? Tell me, my soul, can this be death? The world recedes, it disappears. Heaven opens on my eyes, my ears with sounds seraphic ring. Lend, lend your wings, I mount, I fly. O grave, where is thy victory? O death, where is thy sting?
Thank you, Sean.
Listen, that was a song. I don't think we picked any
this
song.
This is, this is a Jean-Philippe Rameau. Like I said earlier, Sean and I have been talking about 17th and 18th century French moralists, I think, right? Yeah. So and
thinkers in general.
What's that?
Thinkers in general.
Thinkers in general. And Rameau, one of my favorite classical, he's really Baroque, I think, but let's just call it classical, you know, composers. And I think he's underrated, honestly. And he's a great musical thinker, so I figured we'd listen to some Rameau this evening. Thank you. And we are back. And these guys are in the middle of continuing the conversation. So
I guess we'll just...
Yeah, keep going. Okay, well, let us know where you are.
Well, we'll summarize where we are. So basically, we're talking about the, I suppose, what mythology brings about in terms of like the us and the them. And we gave the examples of... quick recap, the Muhammad and the spider web, where he's running away from his attackers. He sees a cave where the entrance is completely covered in the spider web. He goes inside. The story goes that God doesn't dissolve the spider web. So when the attackers come, they're like, oh, he can't be in that cave. The spider web's all like, it's not messed up. You know, he's in there. And Sean gave the example of the archangel. Was it Gabriel or Michael? Yeah, Gabriel coming and basically telling Mary that, you know, she's going to get, you know, impregnated by, not literally, but, you know, by God or whatever.
She's been filled with child.
Filled with child, yeah. And we're just talking about what that results in. And the thing I was going to say was basically, like, so Sean, for example, you said that when you're in the myth, you believe in, you know, like, oh, yeah, of course God did that, right? God did that, I believe in that. And when you're asked of the myth, you're like, oh, that's complete BS, right? But I think even when you're in the myth, there's also two different results. Two different beliefs they're not contradictory, but, like, and I think it really depends on the myth too. But like, at least with the spiderweb myth, it's like, okay, there is a distinction between, like, it's almost invigorating of like the believer who God helps, and you believe that because you're within the myth. But also, boy, I'm sure glad I'm not part of that attacker group as well, right? Or let's say within the Mary myth, it's like, wow, and this might be more subconscious. I mean, this might, it's definitely depending on the myth, but it's also like, you know, thank God that God impregnated Our Lady, right? But it's also, I think, a different thing where it's also invigorating at the same time. We're like, wow, God helped my group. And it's not just a group thing. It's like, wow, God helped my prophet. God helped whatever. Or in Mary's case, like, wow, this is invigorating and God has this ability. So when I try to bring that into the modern day, I think, yes, there is obviously ins and outs. For, you know, let's go about Luke Skywalker. The Empire is clearly like Nazi Germany, right? It's a us and them thing versus, like, you know, us the rebels.
Good versus evil.
Good versus evil, right? And the fascist, you know, empire or whatever. But it's also, I think, invigorating, which I think, I know, that's where I think we might disagree, or maybe not even disagree. I think that passion and drive, that idea of, like, this is invigorating, inspiring, whatever, I think is becoming more pronounced. Like, while there are still distinctions and, like, the message of different stories, you know, obviously create boundaries, the other messages are also, I think, much more universal in that they invigorate people. Like, the story of Theodore Roosevelt, like, it's not a myth at all, but, like, the strong man Theodore Roosevelt is someone to be kind of looked up to. And it's not really a myth. It's more of just the emotional drive of it. It's also, he's also an American imperialist, but what's kept throughout through anybody that's hearing it and through any story is really the inspiring aspect of it. And I think our modern day characters are becoming less and less divisive, I should say. Although they still are divisive.
Do you think that myths tend to be inspiring?
I think that's almost the point. I mean,
because I would disagree with that. Let's take Heracles, okay. Right? Heracles was not a really admirable guy. He was prone to anger, gluttonous, lustful, strong, yes, but not in the end really admirable as a human being.
I think it depends on the myth at that point, though, because, like,
he's not a god. He's a demigod.
Well, actually, this is where we left off in the thing between differences between heroes and gods. And I almost want to expand that into, and this is much more like a personal distinction of almost a distinction between mythology and religion, or maybe even story and belief or whatever, right? Like. And like, for example, like, there is the thing that you believe in, right, which might be Zeus or whatever, and the story that is either a folktale that has a lesson, either is a cultural story that's supposed to say something about your people, or is inspiring or whatever, right? So in terms of Hercules, I still think that story is somewhat inspiring as, like, you know, just as overcomer, you know, just... You know, like, you can overcome kind of story. He's not admirable, but I think it's also at the same time giving the notion of, like, strength and these values of your of the story. And another example might be like, let's say like this weird myth of like Thor and like fighting the world serpent, right? And a whole, there's a whole lesson of like equality and fighting nature. And these are lessons that are brought out and supposed to like make you just like emotionally understand. But I think there's also, of course, the actual beliefs of these gods as well, which I think are somewhat different in how they connect with a person.
Well, I think that's a good point. But if we look at most myths, and if we look at the Christian and Muslim mythology, they are actually relatively unique in that the deity in those mythologies is beyond this planet and is truly transcendental. Yeah. Whereas when you go to almost every other mythology, the gods, not just the heroes, but the gods as well, and the goddesses, take part in the everyday world. If we go back to the Iliad, the gods and goddesses are always taking sides and always helping when they can. Sometimes they will say, they have to go to Zeus and they will say, I want to help so-and-so. Yeah. But sometimes the fates dictate otherwise, and Zeus will tell them, you can't, because that hero is fated to die. And so even Zeus, and this also goes back to the creation myths of a lot of these pantheistic religions, even Zeus is answerable to a higher.
I think that's actually goes into this point of like, so for example, in those stories, the gods are sometimes examples and sometimes literal action takers to portray these lessons. While in Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, and whatever, it's like the dictation of the lesson instead of the example of the lesson, or the I want to bring that Thor and the snake story again. Thor is, that story is showing the deity Thor in the action of presenting the lesson that nature is, you know, infinite, or not infinite, but like you can't beat nature kind of thing.
Right.
While in a Christian or Islamic story, it's like God is telling you this is the lesson. It's not like, oh man, God did this, or God's like, oh man, you can't do that. It's like, oh, like, you know, I'm bound by nature too. It's yeah, you're right. It's less humanistic. It's less anthropomorphic. It's just, is the dictation of it, which is very interesting.
But it's also largely more moral.
Yeah.
Let's take a couple flood stories. Okay. Yeah. It's assumed that the Genesis flood story about Noah comes from ancient Sumer. And if you go back to the Epic of Gilgamesh, again, that flood story appears. Okay. Now, there's a couple profound differences between these two stories. They are almost exactly alike in many ways. For instance, the size of the ark.
Yeah.
It's almost exactly the same. But the reason for the flood is very different. And this brings up the moral aspect of Christianity versus these other more ancient cultures or mythologies. The gods don't really care that much about the humans. All they care about is sacrifice. And the reason that the Sumerian gods wanted to get rid of humanity in the flood was because they were keeping them awake at night. And there's anthropomorphism right there. Whereas in the Christian or Judaic myth, God wants to punish human beings for being immoral and cruel and evil. So there's a profound difference. And part of the covenant that God makes with Noah is the admittance that, yes, you know, there's nothing I can do to make you more moral other than your own free will. I gave you free will, that's the problem. But you have to realize that I produced this flood because I thought you were evil. Not because you were keeping me awake at night. And that's a profound difference between the mythologies that come out of the actual age, about 500 BC or a little before, particularly the Christianity and Buddhism, Zoroastrianism. They have this moral aspect that a lot of the other mythologies don't.
And I think even within the Christian Islam, you know, the God, Yahweh, whatever, there's also an evolution, I think, within even that. So, like, you know, this is very, you know, like impromptu, but like, let's say the evolution of gods as natural force, or maybe not natural forces, but these uncontrollable forces that are like, just do what they want, right? Into forming into a reward punishment kind of thing, you know, moral sense, right? Then eventually kinds of, maybe with some back and forth, transitioning into a much more like I'm talking like maybe over a span of like 1,000 years, pantheistic sense. So like, for example, we start with like the Jewish God, which is all about, you know, punishment, reward, kind of mean in a certain sense, transitioning into a loving God of Jesus, right? And then Islam comes around and kind of reverts it back to the Old Testament a little bit, but then going to the Golden Age, starts to delve into some more pantheistic stuff with Ibn Arabi and shit, and then with the development of like, you know, early modern philosophy and like the Enlightenment and stuff, Spinoza and whatnot, God starts to become much more almost logical and like just universalistic and just like this weird sense where at that point it's not any sense of God that we've ever known before. So it's really interesting, and I think that's when really the distinction of mythology and religion, or at least as I'm putting it, it might be a different distinction, is starting to split, where almost the belief of this thing is different than the actual, you know, oomph of it, I guess, if that makes any sense. Like, we're like, the belief of God nowadays is much more of like a, like, is, you know, some people might say like, oh, it's very unlikely the universe might have been made, is made by nothingness. So people nowadays who are deists believe, or even just deism, they believe that God exists based out of like necessity. Where in the past, it's like, you believe in God because he might punish you, or you believe in God because it's like in your life kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, so let's go back to one of the universal reasons for myths, and myths have many reasons for being developed or told, and that is the ideological basis, and that is to explain things.
Yeah.
Why is there a sky? Why does the sun come up? Why does it? Well, we don't know exactly how the ancient person looked at the sun. Did they see the sun traveling over the... Well, they probably saw the earth traveling over the... You know, that's... Most mythologies tell us that. They saw the sun as traveling across the earth, not the earth revolving on an axis. The sun is the thing that moved.
Yeah.
The earth didn't move.
Yeah. I mean, the whole raw story of, like, the riverboat with, you know... Yeah.
And that ideological explanation, why is there winter and summer? Why is there thunder?
Yeah.
And myths, one of their functions, although the prehistoric human would not have thought of this, they just wanted to explain why these things happened. And these stories, as they developed them, explained that phenomena.
There's a name for that theory.
It's not necessarily a theory. It's just one of the purposes that... It's not the only purpose, but it's one of the many purposes that myth serves.
I mean, it connects with... I mean, there's different, that is a theory, but there's different like iterations of that. For example, I wish I knew these guys. I remember these guys' names. I studied them for a test, but like that connects to sometimes like the personification of nature in an attempt to control nature. That's another theory. I forget who said it, but it's interesting because there are certain, like, for example, criticisms of religion nowadays. And the guy that comes up is, what's his name? Sam Harris. Yeah, which I know he's whatever, but like he's not that bad at the end of the day, right?
No, he's actually really smart. It's just that I think he's gone a certain way for wrong reasons.
He abandoned that group recently, I think. He actually called them out, the supposed intellectual dark web BS. He called them out, actually, which is like, thank you, Sam Harris. But there's this whole criticism of like moving from the personal religion to the... It's almost like going in a reverse, where if you think mythology and religion was originated on the basis of explaining nature, then it transformed into a much more like personal, much more like actual, like what we know nowadays as mythology and religion, and now is reverting back to a sort of, okay, we believe in God because like what else, for whatever, right? A lot of these critics of religion, which I don't know if I agree with a specific point or not, are like saying, for example, moderates. And I'm sure I mentioned this in earlier episodes of the podcast. For example, moderate religious people take into account those back steps of God explaining whatever, right? For example, God is no longer in the rain. God is no longer even in human creation.
God's with me every night.
How? Yeah.
Actually, even that to a certain extent, like, God is becoming less and less and creating these moderate religious people. And the whole question for the future is, and this might go back to the earlier thing, is like, where from now? This feels very old school Orthodox tonight because it's very anti-religion, but it's like, you know, God is losing steps in a certain sense. You know, we're reverting back to it. We're reverting back to the nature worship, you know, explaining nature theory and shit.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I just want to bring that out with Sam Harris.
No, I mean,
now,
I...
Because I know he argued that, like, a few years ago, but...
No, there's always the question. I mean, when you see people from the point of view, I guess it could be a confirmation bias, but when you're looking at it from the point of view of someone that isn't religious, that's never been religious, and could never really identify or want to be with, you know, like somebody religious, even though it's like admirable to be able to fool yourself into something like that, I just don't see. I feel like whenever you see religious people these days, they're either from an older generation or very clearly indoctrinated. You could just see straight through it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and back in the day, when everybody, or I don't want to say everybody, but when people were more religious more regularly, as opposed to now where we're in this, like, you know, heathen society, it might have been normal. But, you know, nowadays I enter like a religious circle, and no disrespect or anything, but I just like, everyone has this certain facade that they're carrying, that they're trying to, that they're being watched by at all times
some
by
kind
God.
Of insight.
So they act a certain way. You know, I don't want to act a certain way because some God is watching me.
I mean,
I'm sorry.
Whether it be like Odin or whoever.
I think that's shifted though. And that's like going back to my earlier point. Like,
you're right. It's shifted. It's not as normal. That's why it seems even more abnormal now see that.
But that's the thing. I think that's a secondary effect of it. Because I think the whole idea of someone's watching you or my actions are guided by other things, those are facilitated on different things. But I think the same effect is still happening. For example, let's go like the Middle Ages, like the authority of the Pope has now become the authority of the U.S. president or something like that. Like, I don't think it's the same thing at all, but I do think there is a sense of like, we still believe in things. Like, we still illogically believing things, even things like Max Stirner's like the spook of money. Like, what value does money have, for example?
But that's not mythology, though.
But it's not mythology, yeah. But no, it's not mythology.
Got him.
No, but in terms of, like, God and religion, like, the religion is a out group. But I think there's a lot of other belief groups that still tend to cling to things. Still.
Can I ask something?
Yeah.
So is Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny and the leprechaun on St. Patrick's Day and all these things, is that mythology?
I think so, in a certain sense.
Is that considered mythology, since Jesus Christ is considered mythology?
Well, Jesus Christ is a god.
Yeah, I know, but
Santa Claus isn't.
Yeah.
And the Easter Bunny certainly isn't a god.
No, he isn't a god. But he's dropping eggs, man.
Right.
He's an ultra god.
But if you go back to the definition of mythology,
would it consider them a type of mythology?
Maybe closer to kids,
and we're brought up in this world, we're set to believe in these set things each month and each holiday.
Who actually believed in that shit?
When you're young and dumb and 4 years old.
I never one time believed
I called out Santa Claus in second grade and everybody got mad at me.
I would suggest that those are folktales.
Yeah, folktales. But and you considered folktales to be a type of mythology, right?
They're oftentimes mixed with them.
I think Santa Claus is a mythology.
Is there a story with Santa Claus?
Yes, there actually
is. I mean, yeah, but the
it's actually more. It's actually more of a legend.
Yeah, it's a legend.
Because it's based on a historical figure.
Yes, okay, yeah.
Right. But the Easter Bunny...
that shit was like a hoax.
That's just a folktale.
Yeah.
And it's not a mythology, but folktales have some overlap with mythology. But the fact that it's not a god...
Yeah, he's a bunny.
Yeah, it means it's not a myth. Right. But, you know, what I can say... I can tell you that, I hate to admit it, but I'm
believing the Easter Bunny?
No, I tend toward belief in the ancient god Pan. the god
what,
of
what is that consist of?
The god of fields and forests and.
Even that too, man.
Right, and I believe in him. I would like to believe in him as an actual deity.
Yeah. So, I guess I'm trying to think of examples and whatnot. In terms of like mythology, that's not involving of gods. It's hard to think of examples.
That doesn't happen.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm trying. Like, the closest thing I was going to think of was Native American religion, which is mostly filled with animal spirits. But there is still the idea of the Great Spirit. Which
there is, also animal spirits are considered otherworldly.
Yeah. But it depends on. Well, I guess they are still worshipped. Like, in some cases, the spirits are not worshipped. They're mostly just seen as like things. But in those cases, there are still other spirits that are at the end they worshipped. So, I mean, the only other thing that I can really think about is like, but even Wicca is like a religion that has some sort of like. Wicca is like that witch religion, basically. Oh. Yeah, I mean, there's still an aspect of like hierarchy and shit like that. Maybe not worship, but like maybe like hierarchy, huh?
Voodoo.
It's connected. I would say. I mean, I'm not the biggest. I'm not really versed in Wicca, but
they're cousins.
I'm sure. Yeah, it's just like modern day stuff like that. Yeah,
it's weird.
I think it's time we hit a song. I think, right?
Yes.
What's the next one?
So. For those of you that know and or don't know, and anybody that does actually listen to this podcast, which I don't think very many people do, unless they're somebody that knows us. Yeah. Whoever does listen, as you know, if you do, it's been 2 years since the inception of Our Thoughts Tonight. Sometime around last week and this week. We don't know exactly. So, happy birthday to Our Thoughts Tonight. And we're going to continue on with the conversation. Zach, you look like you want to say something.
Our Thoughts Tonight.
Our Thoughts Tonight. All right. And I am going to lead in to the break. I think Sean's got a poem.
Yeah, I have a poem for
Sean's
you.
Got a poem. And we're going to bring it back to some of the OG Our Thoughts Tonight fans and play some Bulgarian Orthodox Church.
OG Our Thoughts Tonight.
So this whenever poem, you're ready, Sean.
This poem comes from medieval Ireland. It's called Finn's Pastime. And what it portrays is one mythology taking over another. In this case, the Christian mythology misplacing the earlier Celtic mythology, which has happened throughout history. The Christian mythology is unique among many mythologies in that it would not allow worship of other deities, whereas most other mythologies are very accommodating about other deities. And so this one is that Christian mythology overcoming the more ancient Celtic mythology in early medieval Ireland during the same time of Patrick. In fact, Finn addresses Patrick directly. It's called Finn's Pastime. The author is unknown. Oh, croaking Patrick, I curse your tale. Is the king of the Fenians in hell this night? The heart that never was seen to quail, that feared no danger and felt no spite? What kind of god can be yours to grudge, bestowing of food on him, giving of gold? Finn never refused either prince or drudge. Can his doom be in hell in the house of cold? The desire of my hero who feared no foe was to listen all day to Drumderig's sound, to sleep by the roar of the Asaro, and to follow the dun deer round and round. The warbling of blackbirds in Letterly, the strand where the billows of Rory fall, the bellowing ox upon wild Moymee, the lowing of calves upon Glen Daval, the blast of a horn around Sleeve Groat, the bleat of a fawn upon Quoa's plain, the seabird's scream in a lonely spot, the croak of the raven above the slain, the wash of the waves on his bark afar, the yelp of the pack as they round drumless, the bane of Bran upon Knock in Air, the murmur of fountains below Sleeve Miss. the call of Oscar upon the chase, the tongue of the hounds on the Fenian's plain, then a seat with the men of the bardic race. Of these delights was my hero fain. But generous Oscar's supreme desire was the maddening clashing of shield on shield, and the hewing of bones in the battle ire, and the crash and the joy of the stricken field.
Are we back now?
Our Thoughts Tonight is back this evening. We're here with Sean and Ishik, and Zach is over there somewhere, but he'll be back.
I feel like this episode is going to be a very... I think we should go for a little bit longer. I don't know. I think there's a lot... We can always split it into two parts, but like, I think there's a lot to talk about with mythology. Because we're not even talking about the... like, we're talking a little bit about the individual stories of mythology, but I think... I mean, there's a lot to cover with that.
What do you want to cover?
Yeah. You know, you have something, right?
Let's actually do a comparison, okay? Probably the two most well-known mythologies in European and American culture are the Greek, Roman, Greco-Roman, and the Norse. So let's do a little comparison about the end of the world, right, in both mythologies, or also the beginning of the world in both mythologies. And how environment may shape those.
I'm not actually familiar with the Greek end of the world. I'm guessing it's something to do with like Gaia or something.
Actually, there is no specific myth about
Yeah, I never heard of something like that.
There's none. But the gods, in fact, like Venusberg, the gods just continue to live. And Venusberg is a medieval myth that Venus is in a cave and she seduces knights. Right? What's that opera by Wagner in which he caught, it's not Lohengrin, it's Tannhauser. Tempts Tannhauser and he lives with her beneath the mountain and makes love to her quite often.
Yeah.
And finally he goes back to try to reintegrate himself into the Christian mythology because of his love for Elizabeth.
Let's do
a great... Great intro. I think I don't know if it's the intro or the outro, but it's so epic.
We should do a comparison of the beginning of the origin stories. I think they both have origin stories.
Well, I'd like to go to Ragnarok, which is a more distinct end of world story, and I'm wondering the reason these two might be worth comparing is I'm wondering if I'm in a northern climate, more north than Anchorage. Anchorage, I think, is about the same latitude as Oslo, right? And so you're dealing with a winter that is very dark, very cold, and especially during the Little Ice Age, and how much that would shape your worldview. The sun is all important to you. You don't know the science of the sun rising and falling, solstice to solstice, the rotation of the world, the earth on its axis.
Yeah.
Will there be a day when the sun doesn't come back? And the Norse have a myth about the land of cold. Niflheim, I believe, is the land of cold. And they also have a myth about the end of the world where the forces of evil, Loki, the great wolf, Fafnir, and the giants will all confront Odin with all his heroes he's gathered at Valhalla, and there'll be a great, great fight. And even though the heroes of Odin will fight valiantly, they will all die, and the world will be enveloped in flame and darkness and then eventually cold.
And it's, you mentioned the sun and the moon. The whole thing with the Ragnarok is the wolves, Skuld and Hati, as swallowing the sun and the moon as well, with that specific example. But it's still weird. Like, so the thing that I was saying about before with Greek mythology, now that I remember about Norse mythology, is, so for example, you mentioned Niflheim, right? There's Niflheim, the land of ice, and Muspelheim, the land of fire, right? And the whole thing with the origins, you know, I'll go
and
to
Jotunheim.
Huh?
And
Jotunheim with the giants, yeah. With the Jotun and stuff. Like, for example, you would suspect a culture to, you know, in such a freezing climate, to put so much emphasis on the sun, and they do. But there is still evil aspects of like the idea of heat and fire. Like the land of fire, Muspelheim, is supposed to, you know, be the land of Surtur, the evil giant, right? Who is like all about fire, right? And he's supposed to like kill one of Odin's sons. And with Greek mythology, to do a quick comparison, is like, well, sorry, not Greek mythology, Egyptian mythology. Like you would suspect such a heating, dude. That's gonna mess up the voice sound. For example, within Egypt, where it's so hot, you would not suspect, like, a sun god to be so, like, good. But it is good. Ra is a good god.
Well, if you look at most mythologies or if you look at most cultures, the sun is all important to all of them.
Yeah, for all of them.
Because without the sun, the crops don't grow. Yeah. And therefore, the sun is usually the supreme deity.
Yeah.
For instance, Ra in Egypt.
Yeah.
Right? Zeus is not a god of the sun, but he's a god of lightning and storms. But he controls the sun in some way because his son drives the great chariot across the sky. The moon is a female deity. The sun's definitely masculine. The moon is female.
In
most mythologies, right? There are exceptions.
In Norse, I think it's the other way around. Is it? Yeah, it's usually, I think the moon is supposed to be chasing the sun as like a male to a female, I think. And I'm not sure. Can you actually double check that?
What was that?
It was the masculine and feminine aspect of the moon and the sun in Norse mythology. I mean, it is usually masculine.
That's the exception.
Yeah, that's the exception. Yeah.
So it's not surprising the sun is important to most mythologies. But if I'm in Egypt and I'm in Greece, the year tends to stay mild.
Yeah.
I don't get the cold temperatures I get in the Northlands.
I mean, even the aspect of like something cold. I mean, the only example I can think of is like, what are they called? Hyperboreans, like very ice.
Very far north.
Yeah, very far. Like, they're not even, like, I think they're certainly supposed to be evil, but they're just seen as like other, I think, as far as I know.
It's almost like a
foreign, you know, alien almost.
Like an other world.
Yeah, yeah. It's
the land of Hyperion.
Yeah, there's no like opinion on it. But yeah, when it comes to the north, though, I'm still confused about that, though. Like, For a people who kind of yearn for that warm climate, why is the land of fire still seen as evil?
Because fire can be evil. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean,
Ryan, you want to say something?
So I have the soul and Mani. I don't know if I'm mispronouncing those. Moon is the personification of the moon in Norse mythology. Mani, personified, is arrested in the poetic Edda, compiled in the 13th century from earlier traditional sources, and the prose Edda, written in 13th century by Snorri Sturluson. Both sources state that he is the blah, blah, blah. Let's go on. So the moon is feminine.
Oh, okay. So I was wrong. Here.
And let's see. Let's look at soul.
Who was the moon?
Yeah, it was. That's what it is. That's Mani
is.
And Sol.
I can't recall it either.
So it's the sun chasing the moon. Mani.
But we should point out to the prose Edda and the poetic Edda as compiled by Snorri Sturluson.
Yeah.
He's just taking oral stories that have passed down through the centuries.
Yeah, I mean,
putting them into.
I mean, the poetic Edda or prose Edda was like in the 1300s or something like that, which is like hundreds of years after the actual. Like
thousands,
yeah, or thousands, that, yeah, really, yeah.
So he just took it and put it in these in this format. I guess.
I think it was a Christian.
Hesiod did the same thing for Greek mythology in the 8th century BC, and to a large extent, Homer did as well. Nobody had written down. Homer was, I actually believe there was a real Homer, right? So there's that discussion of whether Homer really existed or not. But Homer also established a lot of, in literary form, when it was eventually written down about 200 years after Homer, established a lot of the Greek myths. So the whole family of, the dysfunctional family on Olympus, let's call it, starts with Hesiod and Homer. So a lot of these compilers came around much, much later, and they wrote down the tales they heard people tell.
I mean, I know we talked about this either on the podcast or off it, but the whole idea of mythologies talking about things in the past, and I know we've mentioned Gilgamesh with that, with the idea of like, you know, back in the time where the first bread was made. And obviously that's a note, you know, to like agriculture and stuff like that. But like, it's always been crazy. And as just a quick side note, it's always been crazy that these mythologies are in reference to things more ancient when they themselves are so ancient, especially things like Sumerian myths. And maybe now we can talk to a little bit about origin of myths. It's like, you know, a lot of these myths have probably some origin, at least the Western ones, have some origin in some Indo-European myths or whatever.
Well, let's talk about the related to that. Let's talk about the origin of legends, okay? Yeah. And let's use the Trojan War as an example. All right. So in the Mycenaean age, which runs like 1500 to about 1100 BC, you have these great cultures in the Aegean area: Crete, Mycenae, the two big ones, and also I'm not sure what culture it was that controlled Turkey at that point, but the
Some Lydians and
Troy.
Right? Yeah, Troy. Right? Yeah.
And so the Trojan War was probably a war of trade.
Yeah.
All right. But then the Dark Age occurs after the fall of the Sea People come in and chaos erupts all over the course of the Eastern Mediterranean. And there's a period of what they call the Dark Ages.
Literacy falls out.
These cultures are forgotten. They fall apart. But then about 800 BC, people start to get a grip again, and they come across these ruins in Mycenae and also in Crete, and these great palaces which they have no idea how to build.
Yeah.
The art has been lost through time. They fabricate stories about these incredible people who lived before us. And we get the stories of Achilles, and we get the stories of Odysseus, and we get the stories of Menelaus and Agamemnon. And a lot of scholars think that that's how legends developed. And mythology could be the same way.
I mean, it's funny because you can literally have that into any sort of rise-fall period of history. Like, maybe not so... Like, I think it becomes less and less, like, I suppose, maybe not mythological, but less and less religious as time goes on. But, like, even something like, you know, Western Roman Empire ends, and we have this, like, you know, Charlemagne's the new Roman Emperor, or this idea of Caesar with Shakespeare, you know? It's like these old stories coming back as, like, these... Where instead of, like, historical accounts, there are... They become stories, almost.
Yeah, the big difference is that there was a literary tradition for those other ones, but there was no literary tradition for the Mycenaeans and the Cretans. That text, nobody knew how to read the old text.
So it was just like, looking at these, you know, ancient structures and whatnot, and So, in that sense, so it's funny, because, and then going back before that, to the whole, you know, the rise of agriculture, you know, it's not literary, but it's, I suppose, a memory of an action, a memory of an experience of agriculture. But I wonder, I don't know, I feel like the origin of these myths, like, it's funny because there's this, you know, we've talked about this before in this episode with the archetypes and whatnot. Like, each revolution of these stories, right, carrying those original lessons forward, right? And I don't know, I just think it's kind of interesting that each iteration is based upon different factors, where it's like, you know, where there's literary or where it's archaeological, it's still the, in a certain sense, it's almost proving the existence of these archetypes, where even in these historical accounts, these archetypes exist. Maybe that's a different question we can ask, is like, are we as people attributing these archetypes to these historical accounts, or are they actually coming from these accounts?
Well, let's look at one theory in particular. Okay, where do our ideas of gods and goddesses come from? And I think a lot of scholars tend toward the theory that they are personifications of natural powers.
Yeah.
If we go to India, okay, very ancient India, say 1500 BC. Agni is the god of fire. Varuna is the god of the sky. And Indra, like Zeus, is the god of thunder. Now, eventually, they are personified. But in the original form, they are the thunder. They are the sky god. They are the god of thunder. They have no human attributes. But at some point, they become personified. And they become personified into Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. And I think that's also true with or I shouldn't say I think it's also true, but theoretically, or it possibly happened in Greece as well,
yeah.
that the thunder became personified as this human-like person, Zeus. So natural powers eventually take on human attributes.
You know, this reminds me of something that I saw. Like I swear, like it was. It's been like years since I saw this, but it was like it was a comparison of god of the Greek gods and like Middle Eastern gods, right? How there is, and I think we talked about this like years ago, a difference of like, for example, the Greek gods are very rarely, if at all, animalistic, right? They literally are almost like humans, right?
Right.
Yeah, but like. Egyptian gods have animal faces.
Oh,
and
right.
And Mesopotamian gods have animal faces. And I forget, I mean, it's been so long since I saw it. It was like a video on it, but it was like this difference of how, and those are more ancient, so it does make sense. But this distinction between these two groups says, like, why did the Greeks like over humanize these forces of nature? While like in Egypt or whatever, they were still of the land. They were still like the jackal or the bird or whatever. I don't remember what the person said.
And I think that's a really, really difficult question to answer. And it has to do with a lot of cultural factors, I think.
Yeah.
The humanism that developed in Greece that didn't develop in, and maybe it has to do with democracy. Maybe it has to do with the roots of democracy and the root. And although
the religions, like the beliefs of these gods, predate democracy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it goes back to the early polises of the earliest polises. Somehow the Greeks thought differently in regards to the deities, and made them more human. Maybe because the Greeks themselves somehow thought of the human as more important, and to a certain extent, their mythology portrays that, because when you look at the god. The Titan Prometheus, he helps not only create man, but he gives man fire, and he helps man as much as he can. Zeus punishes him tremendously for that, but it shows the human creature as important to the deities.
I'm going to go super reductionist here, and maybe even conservative in a certain sense, but this whole idea of the humanist thing, right? This is going to sound like super conservative of me, but like the whole idea of the emphasis on humanity, like I'm trying to just think, like in Egyptian mythology or in Mesopotamian mythologies, like humans are very just, they're not seen as anything. And in Greek mythology in a certain sense too, but culturally practiced, that's, it's a bit more humanistic, at least in a very surface level sense. So I guess the question is like, this is going to go really weird, but like, why did the whole value of, literally the value of humanity survive in the West while humanity was still seen as more of just a pawn game for many other cultures? I mean, it was still in the West too, but at least in the practical sense, it wasn't. Kind of.
I think that goes back to when the first sense of democracy came into play. And therefore, the individual is part of a greater whole and not merely a plaything of the gods. Going back to the flood stories, the gods just want to get rid of the humans in the Sumerian myth because they keep them awake, they're troublesome. They need them to work for them. They're basically like god slaves. They need them to give cult, they need them to work for them. That's not true in the Judaic mythology, and it's not true in, well, it's partially true in the Greek, because the Greeks' gods and goddesses demanded cult. Mm-hmm. They demanded sacrifice. But yet, there's something different there that has to do with the human being as part of the polis, as part of this whole, and not merely as part of a tyrannical under an emperor or a pharaoh.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like, so one thing in support of this is also like even Norse mythology where, I mean, bringing in Ragnarok again, there is the whole almost emphasis on the humans again, where you, at the end of time, you still have a man and a woman to sprout the next generation of humanity. So there's still, even in that, there's a little bit of that. But I mean, I don't want to be too biased here, because like, it is still true that in you know, ancient Greece, it wasn't all democratic, obviously.
No, Sparta wasn't. Exactly.
So, but at least within the Greek stories, there's, I mean, this, for example, I know we distinguish heroes and gods, but like, the Greek hero is literally a thing that everybody kind of understands. It's a Greek hero.
Right.
It's a human, or at least demigod hero, which is still, at the end of the day, part human, that has these things. But whereas, like, say, in Egyptian mythology, it's like, okay, the story of Ra. And there is a story of, like, the pharaohs and whatnot. But
good point, because you don't really have the stories of heroes in most cultures.
I mean,
there is Gilgamesh.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, but even Gilgamesh is still a little bit, like...
Well, he's surprised. I'm not sure how this works out.
Yeah.
But according to the myth, he is two-thirds god and one-third human, and the other way around. I'm not sure how that math works out, but that's what they came up with.
I mean... It's funny because, like, let's transition into Rome for a sec. It's like with the history of Rome is also a shift within that single entity of like this shift between an everyday normal kind of guy of a hero of that to like the god emperor, right? So the idea of like, oh man, I'm forgetting their names, Cincinnatus or whatever,
he's never deified, but
he's never deified.
How about Romulus?
Or Romulus, right?
Okay.
Kind of like that regular kind of guy who's gone through a lot of troubles and still is. It's never a god. It's kind of thing. It's something to look up to, or something to like remember, and it's a mythical.
Well, Aeneas and
Aeneas too.
Aeneas is not responsible for founding Rome,
mm-hmm.
but he gets the Trojans too, where Rome would be founded later by Romulus and Remus.
Yeah,
but Aeneas is a traditional hero, son of Eumen Anchises and the goddess Aphrodite, and Romulus. I don't think Romulus is born of a god, but he's deified upon his death.
Yeah. Okay.
For founding Rome.
What?
I was going to say, if you guys want to keep going, keep going. But I have a game for all of us.
Okay.
Well, the viewers especially, or listeners. I'm sorry.
Okay. I just wanted to put this last point.
From YouTube
then.
To podcast, saying viewers to.
Is it a long game?
Listeners.
I think it's.
What's that?
We haven't done a game in a while, so I'm kind of.
No,
excited.
No, it's not very long. Yeah. No, I got some. I've got some trivia for all of you.
Okay.
Some mythological trivia.
Yeah, we should get those guys in there, too.
All right, Zach, we're doing a game here in just a second if you'd like to join.
What?
We're doing a game, a trivia game, mythology trivia, but Ushik wants to finish a point here.
Hold on. Before he finishes the point, I think we have reached the longest podcast we've ever done ever.
No way. We're only an hour in.
Dude, this is 2 hours and 21 minutes.
An hour and 21 minutes.
Way, it's going to be the longest episode ever. either way, it is
only an hour. It says two.
An hour and 21 minutes.
Oh, okay, never mind.
Trust me.
False information. Don't listen to me.
Just this last point here, just really quickly with Rome and whatnot. I guess Romulus is deified, but I'm just thinking of the idea of the Cincinnatus, who wasn't deified, even though he's very highly looked upon.
Right.
But then you have like Caesar, who's like. Literally, like a 10 years later after his death, or not even, it's just like immediately God, or Octavian, or Augustus, like immediately, like this deific figure. Like, it's almost like a cultural shift to like, you know, humanistic approaches to something much more, I guess, Eastern in a certain sense.
Yes, very Eastern. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know who wasn't deified?
What?
You.
Man.
Okay.
Wait until he dies.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Yeah. All right.
We're all God.
We're going back to the typical game. I know it's not original to talk shows, but we're doing the trivia game, Murat's trivia game, where I ask the rest of the panel trivia questions about the topic at hand.
Are we taking turns, or are we just all at once?
We're taking turns again. All right.
We've done this before, yeah.
There's no team effort.
We did it with the politics last time, which was also the last time we had the full panel.
Is this a team effort, or just...
No, it's single.
We could do team effort. We'll do Zach and Ushik. Versus Sean and Andrea.
Okay.
So right, team A is Zach's team, or team Z is Zach's team, and team A is team Andrea.
I feel like I'm on a television game show.
Yeah. All right. And I am your host.
Team Fallover.
Okay.
We're team Bang.
I'll start you guys off easy. First one of five wins. Okay, first one of five and
that's where I'm a little nervous. I'm rusty.
She's like, this is all on me. I was like, it's all on you.
For Team Z, name the strong man who completed 12 labors.
Hercules. That guy.
Is that your last?
That's literally it.
Jeez, that was a gimme.
Yeah, I was like, and we literally just talked about it.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you sure about that?
Unless there's some other cultural
now
thing.
He's
are you sure about that?
I'm very sure it's Hercules, not Heracles.
See, he's trying to do the decoy.
Who else?
All right. Told you it was going to be an easy one. Yeah. Okay. Now, for Team A. Here we go.
This is for the next team?
This is for the next team, Team A. Who was the supreme god?
Of which mythology?
Greek mythology.
Oh, Zeus.
Yay! Zeus
it is. Yay! All right.
1-1. The trots are up.
That was a gimme.
These are mainly going to be Norse and Greek mythology.
Why'd you come up with a very complicated question on who's the mother goddess of this Ayathuya, Southeast Asian
who's the cousin of Zeus?
What's the cultural origin of the table and whatever?
What was the name of the turtle that came up through the Hindu Sea?
Tortoise.
Someone gets it.
Okay. Are you ready for your next question?
Let's do it.
His name was Tartle.
With a capital T.
All right. So this is for Team Z again. Now we're tied at 1-1. Oh,
God. About to make a 3.
The suspense rises.
About to LeBron this, bro. I don't
think. Who did Hades kidnap to be his queen?
Oh, what's her name? It's that lady of the fruits in the garden. It was a Persephone or whatever.
You got it.
Yeah, I forgot.
Ding, 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 ding.
Persephone, Persephone.
Persephone.
Oh, come on. You know
Persephone.
I know it.
Is how
I just give a name.
Yeah, Persephone.
Persephone, you know.
Sometimes pronounced Proserpina.
Really? Okay.
Proserpine?
She goes back to Zeus every once in a while. And
Demeter's daughter.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Ready for another? Now we're at Team A.
No, A to Z is better.
Okay.
Okay.
Did you guys study before?
No.
Hell no.
I just read about it a lot.
He's a teacher.
Yeah. He knows a lot.
I dabbled in it.
I know how much I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Who is the god of sleep?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Morpheus.
Greek, I believe.
Yeah, Morpheus.
Hypnos.
Oh.
Look up Morpheus.
Really?
I think Morpheus is his brother or something. They're all related. I know that. But
Morpheus is in the Matrix, guys.
Let's look this up.
Red pill or blue pill, what you want?
I know
I defer to the internet.
I know they're related. I don't know who is who, though. I think it is Hypnos.
The internet.
Morpheus and Hypnos.
The personification of sleep is Hypnos.
Oh, but who's Morpheus then?
I don't know.
Is he darkness or something? Oh, Morpheus is dreams and Hypnos is sleep. That's really
close. He's like the Sandman.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, that was actually kind of a trick.
Man, they're both
not fair, dude.
That's not at all. They're like in the
2-1. 2-1.
Okay.
I know. We're not even on their team. We're like, man, I feel bad for them.
No, but
okay, I'm going to give you guys the curveball here.
Oh, God. Okay. Help me out here.
Wait till I get to the Hindu trivia, Hindu mythology.
I just passed the religion exam a few minutes ago. I got it.
Okay.
Maybe not.
I don't have that.
I don't know.
All right, I'm looking for a good one here.
What's a hymn?
Oh, by the way, while we're at it, everybody check out some Shiva hymns on YouTube. It's so good.
Shiva is also a character from Mortal Kombat.
I'm sure. Yeah, well, he has... Does he have 4 or 6 arms in real mythology?
Shiva's a dude?
I think it's 6. I think he's both, but he's mostly male, yeah.
Yeah, he's a dude.
Yeah.
Oh.
How about it's a dude?
The only Shiva I know is a girl.
Well, he does have a consort. I forget her name, but she does have
They all had consorts, yeah.
Yeah, they all had consorts, yeah. I forget her name, though. It was
Gandavari?
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel bad. I feel misogynistic for not knowing that.
Are we ready?
Here it comes.
Team Z, here we go.
Shoot.
In Egyptian mythology, the human personality has 5 specific constituents. What are they called?
Whoa. Dude, I don't... give me a sec. 5... Wait. constituents?
If like, you get this, I'm going to shit myself, man.
Dude, I mean, I know that, like, the picture of the human was signed. It was as important. Five. Can you at least, like, give us a hint?
Can you repeat the question?
Part? Like,
can you use that in a sentence?
I could give you... Okay, I'll give you an easier question. I'll give you an easier question. Okay, so the answer to that one was really hard. I didn't think it was going to be that hard. Ach, ka, ba... Name and shadow.
Actually, low-key, that Nem part kind of connects with, like, I think maybe even new.
Anyway, so I didn't expect you to speak ancient Egyptian. So.
What if I just spouted that shit out?
That means asshole and
Quran. Okay, here's a good one. Here's a good one. Because it kind of has that, like, contrast type of question that I gave to Team A. Or not contrast, but parallel. Amenthes in Egyptian mythology is equal to what god in Greek mythology?
Ooh. Wow. Amenthes. See, this is my final answer, but my immediate reaction was like something with Hermes, but I know Hermes already has a partner in Egyptian mythology, but I don't know if it's Hermes. What's the name of the Amphes? What?
Sure. Amenthes.
It's Hermes.
Amenthes. You know what? Fuck it. Let's go Hermes. Is it Mercury? Wait, I guess the same person. Yeah. Amenthes. It can't be Amenthes. Because I think Thoth, for some reason, I think Thoth is associated with Hermes.
Do you know this one, Sean?
This is Hermes. Yeah, just go fucking Hermes.
It is Hades.
Really? Amenthes? Because
he's the god of hell.
Yes. I would never guess Hades. I thought, I don't think
it was. The abode of the spirits. Of the deceased, where judgment was passed by Osiris.
Next time we'll pick.
Oh, it's the it's a place.
No,
what?
It no, says
he.
I thought Osiris did it, or Anubis.
In Egyptian, that's just what it says. Mythology, he's equal to Hades because it's the same realm.
I've never heard of Amenthes. That's crazy.
No, me neither.
Yeah, Amenthes.
So I guess Hades is the place, right?
Hades is the place and the god.
So that was a trick question, I guess.
No, it's the place and the name.
Yeah, it is both.
So, this was the place.
Okay.
I don't know if you would have got that. But.
I mean, either way, I would have never thought Hades.
So it was pretty close. It started with the place where Osiris, where judgment was passed by Osiris.
Is there another name for Amenthes? Is there something like that?
Let's Google it.
Because, like, I mean, I lost the point, but, like, Amenthes, I've never heard of that for, like... Have you heard of Amenthes?
I've never heard
Amenthes.
Of
him. Amenthes. Amenthes quadrangle. Duat.
Oh, Duat. Yeah, if it was Duat, I would have known that. Yeah, I know what Duat is. It's fine. Whatever.
Duat. Of course.
Duat? No, the mystical realm. You know, I've read Rick Ryder.
Isn't that the chorus for a 1950s song? Duat, Duat.
Duat, Duat.
Oh, so why did they call it Amenthes, though?
Maybe that's
the... What is the name of the Hellenist Egyptian underworld? Duat.
It should be Duat, yeah.
Amenthes.
Exactly. What's
the Greek equivalent of menthol?
I don't know. And anywhere else on the internet, it doesn't say that Amenthes is what they call it.
I've never
heard. So, I don't know. Maybe this website sucks.
Whatever.
Whatever. All right, 2-1. Now, this is Team A. They can catch up here and really make up some ground. I am really stretching this here.
Stay tuned.
So, are you ready, Team A?
I'm as ready as I'll ever be.
All right. Seems like all of the answers to these are Zeus. Okay.
Isn't he the answer to all? Yeah.
Zeus or Hercules?
Yeah. Okay, all right. This is a good one. Who was abducted by Zeus, who appeared in the form of a white bull?
Europa.
Got it. 2-2. Okay, all right. We're going down to the wire here.
I would have guessed something with like...
What's the level cap? Is it like 5 or...
Yes. Level five, yeah. Okay,
cool.
Win by 2.
I don't know if we're going to win this.
You're going to win by 2.
Call me a menthe.
Menthols.
Okay. A menthols. Actually, first 1-5. Let's just say first 1-5.
First 1-5.
But if you guys get to 5... And they get to 5. Yeah. We keep going. Okay. But if you get to 5, or whoever gets to 5 first, sudden death. Can't. Yeah, sudden death type of thing.
Okay.
I was like, 2-2, so we're going to be here all night.
So if they get to 5, And then you guys are at four. Mm-hmm. You have one question to get to five. If you can get to five, then we'll do sudden death. If you can't get to that one, they win.
Then we do rock, paper, scissors.
Okay.
Then we flip a coin and do rock, paper, scissors.
So now
two.
We're 2-2.
Okay. I'm worried. Fuck you.
What is the name of the hero who killed Medusa?
Perseus.
Yes.
Yeah. He's a demigod.
Yeah. Oh, is he? Yeah, he is.
Yeah. He's Perseus is a demigod. Son of Zeus. Son of Poseidon.
No, in the books it's Poseidon. In reality it's Zeus.
Oh, okay. Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's there's a the whole thing in the book.
Was it a three-way?
No, in the books is actually a thing where it's like, oh, you know, my name is actually after a son of Zeus, but even though I'm a son of Poseidon, you
know? That's funny.
Yeah, it's Perseus.
But you can call me Nancy.
My friends call me Bill.
Imagine a Greek hero named Bill or like Nancy.
He'd probably be a Cyclops with a flannel.
Okay, are we ready for the next question, yep, Team A?
Yeah, we're ready.
All
yeah.
right.
Sean's confident.
Sean was like, this is, I was like practicing my whole life for this moment.
I was raised for this question.
All right.
We'll see.
Name the Greek goddess of wisdom.
Athena.
Athena. All right, now we're 3-3. Now I'm giving you all more complex questions.
I'm really worried.
All right, no more.
The god of thunder,
like, or whatever his name was.
Yeah. What should be like? Who's the god of? What should be like? Some like the question about like where there's two gods or something. That's very rare, but
who's the god of disco?
Who would it be? I don't even know.
Maybe it's the Trinity, the Bee Gees.
No, it's not the Bee Gees. It's
shit, what's his name?
Little Richard?
No. Rick James.
All right, here we go.
Drug.
Rick James, bitch.
Who wrote down? This is for Team Z. Who wrote down the epic Mahabharata while Vyasa was dictating?
Excuse me. Say it one more time.
Who wrote down the epic Mahabharata while Vyasa was dictating?
This is a person or a group of people?
Yeah, this is a person. This is a god.
I know this answer.
Wait, who wrote the Mahabharata?
This is Indian Hindu mythology.
Yeah, yeah.
Who wrote the wrote down the epic Mahabharata while Vyasa was dictating?
Who wrote the Mahabharata? I mean, so it's a god?
We're talking about mythology here. Obviously, it's not going to be your neighbor.
No, but it could be like a historical figure.
It's not a historical figure.
The only guy that comes up is Krishna or the avatar of him or whatever. What's his name? Brahma, Shiva, and it's either Vishnu or Krishna. That's the only god that I can really think of and that would write something. I'm very wrong, I'm pretty sure, but
I have no clue.
I believe it was Ganesh.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
You got it.
They can't steal points, though.
They can't steal it, but still.
Okay. Why not? The elephant guy.
Yeah, why not?
Because you're already going to be ahead of us with the next question, so it's okay.
All right.
Well, that means the next question goes to you guys, because we've already answered.
You answered.
No. It wasn't their question.
It goes to you.
It was these guys. So now it's your question.
Okay. Now it's yours.
I just want to see if you would get that one, honestly.
Ganesh.
All right.
It's like Baba Ganoush. It's like right up
around. It's the elephant dream.
So 3-3 now. All right.
Yeah.
Which one is the first avatar of Lord Vishnu from his Dashavatar?
Say that again, please.
Which one is the first avatar of Lord Vishnu from his Dashavatar?
It's not Rama, is it?
Actually, there's multiple.
Yeah, he did lots of avatars.
It's Matsya.
Oh, I'm sure I would have gotten that one.
Matsya.
I just complained for no reason. I was like, it's what's the name?
Ganesh.
No, Krish. What was the name? Fuck it, whatever.
Okay, so we're back at 3-3.
Okay.
All right.
Wow, I like how we got opposite questions.
Yeah. Indian mythologies.
Now we're going to Norse mythology. So
okay.
Maybe I'll be able to pronounce some of these
2011
names.
Thor film.
Maybe I can answer a question without Ashok interrupting.
Ladies and gentlemen, you waited all season for this episode. I'm giving it to you real.
Jane Foster.
Okay. Now we're on to Norse mythology.
Yeah, it took me a second.
Here we go.
Loki.
He's like, damn, that was the answer.
I have a weird feeling I know which one is.
Which day of the week is... Wait, this is for you guys. Yeah, yeah. Which day of the week is named for Odin?
Wednesday. Wednesday. Oh, it's Wednesday.
Wednesday's day?
Because it's supposed to be Odin's day.
Basically. Or Woden.
Woden's day, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
That was a lot better than the other one.
That was a gimme.
I know, you're like,
that's
geez.
Quick.
Oh, man.
Jeez.
What weapon is Odin most often associated with?
A spear.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a spear.
This horse Sleipnir, he rides.
Now
to
we're
fight.
5-5. I'm going to change the rules up on everyone.
It's 5-5.
4-4, four, four, sorry. 4-4. Four. Four, four. Now I'm going to ask the group a question.
Oh, God.
And whoever can answer this one right
oh,
wins.
No.
Oh,
everybody have your mics ready.
All right.
You got that shit
now I'm going to, let me find a good question here. So,
okay. So when you say a group of questions? So
yeah, all of us, whoever answers first.
Oh, no. Whoever's like fastest. Whoever's kind of fastest. Question.
I got it.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Just slap the table.
Oh, no.
Monty, me.
Monty Python.
Holy hand grenade of Antioch. Correct. You lose.
Man, how about some like Christian mythology? Like, who's the Christian saint that differentiated between Christianity and Judaism?
That's an easy answer. It's me,
Saint Stephen.
Okay.
It's Troy of the Trojan Horse.
The Grateful Dead wrote a song about Saint Stephen.
It's Jerry Garcia.
He's
in the flesh.
He's the guy that's attributed to the distinction between Christianity and Judaism, right? Where he's like tortured or whatever. Not tortured, but like.
I, you know, tell you the truth, I don't know, but I know he was, he was a martyr by arrows.
Yeah, okay. I would have to.
There's some pretty gruesome paintings of him.
Yeah, his name's Keith Richards.
I would have to look it up. I think
in
it's,
another life.
Yeah.
Before.
I think it's him, but yeah.
Before his rebirth. Yeah. Reincarnation is the word.
Yeah. If you threw in some Iranian mythology, I would be lost.
I don't even understand the Egyptian mythology, dude. All I know is Norse and Greek.
The worst thing about Egyptian mythology is about like what time period Egyptian mythology you're talking about. Because it's like, are you talking about Amun? Are you talking about Ra? Are you talking about Amun-Ra?
I can barely enunciate any of them.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
I might as well just say some dum dum do on the microphone.
Especially you're gone.
Okay.
He's a pharaoh from the.
This is. I'm going to be shocked if any of you can get this question.
He's gonna throw us on the table.
Get it.
We'll
see. We shall see.
This mythological creature. This mythological creature's origins possibly come from the pagan goddess of fertility. Which mythological creature am I talking about?
Can we have multiple chances for the answer? Since it's just a group thing?
Whoever gets it first.
I guess satyr?
Okay.
Which mythology is this?
Creature. Though.
Let me read the question again.
Creature?
Which mythological creature is... Which mythological creature's origins come from the pagan goddess of fertility?
Cyclops.
Pixie.
Don't
fairy.
Just throw things out, man.
Elf. Pixie, Airy, Elf, Satyr.
You get one chance to answer. How about that?
What, really?
Well, you guys are just throwing shit out
there. Well, because they can answer. All be answers. They can literally all be answers.
Yes, you before.
You should know.
Which goddess? Which pagan goddess?
Yeah, he said which.
Pagan goddess of fertility.
What's the name?
I can't tell you that.
That's part of the answer.
Oh. It's up to the F. Oh, fuck. Fen. Someone
okay,
Fen.
I can Fentanyl. Give you a clue if you like. Would you like a clue?
Yes. Please.
Okay, so this creature is a myth, or may come from a myth about that goddess's bird, which bird? The goddess that I was mentioning.
Birth bird? Or burn?
Bird.
Bird.
Her like pet bird, let's say.
Her pet bird.
Bird, okay.
Yeah.
I'm thinking Hagrid from Skyrim.
Yeah.
It's a creature. Thinking, you're looking for a creature in Skyrim, right? Creature.
Yes.
Oh, Harpy? No, I don't, that's not my final answer. No, that's not my final answer.
No, it's got to be. It's got
to
be that.
It can't be Harpy.
Would you like it's to know Harpy. The goddess's name? It
please,
might help.
Please.
Yeah. Eoster.
It's like rhymes with toaster. I don't know who this lady is.
Is there...
Eostre.
Is there any possible chance we can know the culture of this person? Or is that too much?
Norse.
Is
mythology.
It
Norse? Germanic goddess of dawn.
Toaster.
Boaster. Eostre.
It's not the Kraken.
No, it's a bird.
It is not the Kraken.
No, it's a creature.
What? Is it really easy, but we're not thinking like that?
Yes, it's really easy.
Rhymes with the Eoster.
Really?
Yes.
You guys give up?
It does rhyme with the Eoster?
No.
No.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
but the answer is within the name, kind of.
Does this creature have wings?
No. It would be interesting if it did, though.
What if that was a bird?
It's a creature in the water.
Is it a creature of the water?
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Okay, so it's on land.
I mean, the only thing that really comes up is like those like bird witch ladies, but
okay. I'll give you guys an easier question after I tell you the answer for this one. The Easter Bunny.
No!
You fucker, are you kidding me?
Oh.
Easter.
Wow.
Yeah, but that's not a monster.
I said a creature.
Creature, okay, creature. Yeah.
Santa Claus,
wow.
You like pretty close. Pretty
wow, that was crazy.
Okay.
Damn it,
dude. I'm going to get
right up my alley.
Oh, it's kind of near Easter. Okay, see
yeah, but creature has a big and evil connotation.
Yeah, yeah. Creature.
If it wasn't for bird, I think, yeah, fuck.
Yeah.
That's interesting, though. I didn't know that.
No, me neither. Obviously, none of us did.
Apparently, the Easter Bunny is mythology.
Apparently.
I told you.
Okay, so one more.
I stand in line.
Bird, motherfucker. Bernie Sanders.
Easter Bunny.
All right, let's do this.
Oh, bird laying eggs. Yes. You know, being a bunny, maybe. I don't know.
Dude, he literally gave it to us. He said, Eostre.
Eostre.
The rabbits certainly are fertile.
Yeah, they are. They, like, multiply so much. Multiply rabbits.
Like seal.
Breed like rabbits.
Yeah.
Chicken.
I think the answer is two.
Answer Zeus, drop mic.
It's all God, man.
It's all Zeus and Odin.
Okay.
Easter Bunny.
Those are my answers. He's like, wrong. It's the leprechaun. You lose.
Oh, man. Some Irish mythology. That'd be crazy.
Who drank the most Jameson? Was it the luck of the leprechaun? Or was it the elf of the Irish?
I think it's...
Okay.
Yeah, okay, well, yeah. Okay.
It was both. My grandma. Trick question. It was me grandmammy.
Which mythological creature... Or, oh, I'm sorry. which mythological entity...
A fairy
was and is based off of an early Christian bishop of Greek descent from the maritime city of Myra in Asia Minor.
Ask that question again, please.
Okay, so which mythological entity is based off of an early Christian bishop of Greek descent from the maritime city of Myra in Asia Minor?
Is it going to be Santa Claus?
St. Nicholas, yeah.
Yeah.
Santa Claus.
We should both kind of get that. Because
no,
I think we
you
both
said
got... Because, I mean,
said
you said entity. That really threw me off.
He said St. Nick.
You got
he
it.
He said Santa Claus before he...
Yeah, but it's St. Nick, not Santa Claus.
But the mythological entity is Santa Claus.
Yeah, St. Nick is the bishop.
Okay.
So...
How about we call it a tie? Because it did technically steal that one question.
All right, that's a tie.
I think it's a tie.
You got it. Do you guys want one more question or call it a draw?
Yes. Sure, let's call it one more question.
All right, one more question.
Man, you guys are so bad. You're just like, oh, we can't be a tie.
Wow. No, I can't.
Why?
And there's this great painting of Santa Claus, or St. Nicholas. Huh? It's amazing, honestly.
Isn't that...
Who is this painted by?
The Byzantine white hair, black face, not...
Who's it painted by? Is that your question?
My grandpa.
No. But this is it's a great painting, honestly. It is. If you ever go on the St. Nicholas Wikipedia page, it's anyone that's listening.
Myra's close to Bursa, I think, right?
I think so, yeah.
I think Myra is Bursa. No, I think about it. I'm not sure.
Bursa is north. It's a... I guess it would be the city of Demre.
Oh, okay. All right.
Where's that?
It's a town and it's surrounding district of the Antalya province. Sorry.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
South Turkey. Yeah. All right.
Doner kebab on the menu.
Six.
Yeah.
You're like.
Sounds like I'm about to put these boys' dick in the dirt.
Okay, now we're gonna wrap it up here. I'm interested to see who's gonna get
wrap it up. Beat
Japanese mythology.
Some
Izanami.
Who is the Yuzaki of the Mediterranean culture?
Chicken.
You're like, correct.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. What did Jupiter send the Titans Prometheus and his brother Epimetheus to punish them after they stole the fire
Tartarus.
From heaven?
Tartarus.
Pandora.
What? Wait, where or when?
Pandora and a jar.
Oh, you said what?
I believe it's Pandora.
Yeah, I thought you mispronounced it and said when.
Yay! I didn't do anything, but, you know.
I got the other.
Got him.
Sean win.
Yeah, they
Team
won.
Yeah, we thought that one. Shit, I thought he said
where. No, I thought he said where.
Even if it was what I wouldn't be okay.
That's what I thought the question was.
No, Prometheus brought fire to humans.
Yeah.
Right?
I thought it asked where did he where did Zeus send Prometheus after to punish? I don't know if it's Tartarus, to be honest.
Well, that's
well,
all,
the
folks.
Caucasus Mountains.
And now you know that we
he tied him to the rock on the Caucasus Mountains and had an eagle eat out his liver every day.
We'll come back after our thoughts tonight.
Talk about.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I think that's going to be it for this episode.
How long has it been? How long has
2 hours now.
Okay. All right.
One last poem?
Last poem from Sean, and we'll have Mozart lead everyone out.
Should we do last thoughts before or after the poem?
Final thoughts? Go check out my YouTube in human form.
I love drums.
New Vaykark album coming soon, probably around Christmas/New Year's. I'm just waiting for my artist to release the album cover.
Subscribe to both channels.
Vaycarch, VACARCH.
And thanks for listening, as always.
Listen to Sean's poems, too.
Sean will be leading us out, and following Sean will be Mozart.
Okay, one thing we didn't discuss is the individual's response to mythology. And one can actually embrace a mythic being that does not belong to any system. Percy Bysshe Shelley was... the English poet was able to do this very readily. He saw powers beyond earthly powers almost everywhere. And it comes back to a quote that I have from Martin Buber. Before I get to the poem, I'd like to quote Martin Buber, the great 20th century Jewish theologian. And it has to do with how we address the deity, no matter what mythology we're in. So this is Martin Buber from his book, Meetings. If to believe in God means to be able to talk about him in the third person, then I do not believe in God. If to believe in him means to be able to talk to him, then I believe in God. And the poem is Tonight by Percy Bysshe Shelley, born in 1792 and died in 1822, in which he addresses night as the mythic being. Tonight by Percy Bysshe Shelley. Swiftly walk o'er the western wave, spirit of night, out to the misty eastern cave, where all the long and lone daylight thou wovest dreams of joy and fear, which make thee tremble and dear. Swift be thy flight. Wrap thy form in a mantle gray, star inwrought, blind with thine hair the eyes of day. Kiss her until she be wearied out, then wander o'er city and sea and land, touching all with thine opiate wand. Come, long sought. When I arose and saw the dawn, I sighed for thee. When light rode high and the dew was gone, and noon lay heavy on flower and tree, and the weary day turned to his rest, lingering like an unloved guest, I sighed for thee. Thy brother death came, and I cried, and cried, wouldst thou me? Thy sweet child sleep, the filmy-eyed, murmured like a noontide bee, shall I nestle near thy side? Wouldst thou me? And I replied, no, not thee. Death will come when thou art dead, soon, too soon. Sleep will come when thou art fled. Of neither would I ask the boon. I ask of thee, beloved knight, swift be thy approaching flight. Come soon, soon.